We felt the appropriate thing to do first was to seek peaceful pressure on the regime in North Korea.
The United States seeks direct dialogue with North Korea. It's Thursday, August 3rd. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Join us as well on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, talks about North Korea shift to a key regional meeting. Vietnam adapts to a new trade environment. Chinese pressure as Botswana prepares to welcome the Dalai Lama. Spotting viruses from space, the future of toys. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Just days after its latest intercontinental ballistic missile test, U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson has called on North Korea to create the conditions where the two countries can have a productive dialogue. He said that can't happen as long as Pyongyang views its nuclear weapons as productive.
We initiated a sustained and continued intensified campaign on what I like to call peaceful pressure, because the options available to us, I think, as all of you well understand, are limited, and particularly if we think we are operating under a short period of time. So we felt the appropriate thing to do first was to seek peaceful pressure on the regime in North Korea to have them develop a willingness to sit and talk with us and others, but with an understanding that a condition of those talks is there is no future where North Korea holds nuclear weapons or the ability to deliver those nuclear weapons to anyone in the region, much less to the homeland.
President Donald Trump has vowed to handle the North Korean threat. On Tuesday, his spokesperson Sarah Huckabee Sanders said the United States is keeping all options, including a military response, on the table. James Kim, a research fellow at the Seoul-based Asan Institute for Policy Studies, tells VOA's Victor Beatty North Korea's continued ICBM testing underscores its rejection of the U.S. approach.
Until North Korea agrees to sit down under the terms laid out by the United States to first freeze and then to eventually denuclearize, then I believe the talks would be a difficult proposition for the United States. And also North Korea has signaled that it is not willing to put denuclearization on the table. Hence, we have no scheduled talks at the moment.
There's a view out there that the North is not really angling to attack the United States, but rather use its nuclear arsenal, perhaps at some time in the future, its ICBM arsenal, as a way to prevent the U.S. from engaging in any possible military threat.
North Korea sees the United States as its biggest threat. Any kind of negotiation that involves denuclearization as one of the options, I think, would be looked upon as something that is less than desirable for North Korea. Having said that, I think it's quite understandable why North Korea would want to develop its nuclear arsenal because of the threat that the United States poses.
Mr. Tillerson also referenced China having 90% of all economic activity with North Korea, so implying that it has leverage. He says China has a special and unique relationship with the North. Can China influence the North, given what the Chinese UN ambassador said Monday, that it doesn't have that much leverage?
The United States is not, and South Korea is included in this, along with Japan, that the allies are not convinced that China has exerted enough pressure on North Korea, that there's more that China can do. I think everyone agrees that China has all the leverage here. China simply does not want to use its leverage for good reasons.
Mr. Tillerson says the U.S. does not want regime change. We do not seek the collapse of the North Korean regime. We don't seek an accelerated reunification of the peninsula, and we don't seek an excuse to send our military north of the 38th parallel. We're not your threat, but you are presenting an unacceptable threat to us, and we have to respond.
This is the policy of the Trump administration, of maximum pressure and engagement, that the administration is willing to engage with North Korea on its terms, and if it does not, then the other option that the U.S. has is to increase pressure until the North Koreans changes their mind on that issue.
Republican Senator Lindsey Graham told broadcast interviewers North Korea and China are miscalculating Mr. Trump's resolve that Pyongyang not acquire nuclear weapons that can strike the United States. Graham said the president has to choose between regional stability in Asia and homeland security. The senator said Mr. Trump has told him there will be a war with North Korea if it continues down this path. These are among some of the top Asia stories trending on voanews.com. Papua New Guinea Parliament re-elects Prime Minister. Ex-Thai Prime Minister and three others acquitted of charges in fatal 2008 protests. United States to begin blocking North Korea travel at the end of August. New eruption at Indonesia volcano spreads ash for miles. North Korea lacks technology to strike U.S. mainland, say analysts. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and much more on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also, try out our voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. No diplomatic breakthroughs are expected to reduce tensions over the North Korea nuclear threat at this week's ASEAN Regional Forum in Manila, even though it's one of the few global events where all of the major countries involved will participate. Southeast Asia security analyst Carl Thayer is with Australia's Defense Force Academy in Canberra.
More likely to see a showdown between China, Russia versus the U.S., on who bears the greatest responsibility for dealing with this issue.
The United States, North Korea, China, Russia, South Korea, and Japan are all sending high-level delegations to the annual Regional Security Summit organized by the Association of Southeast Asian Nations that includes Indonesia, the Philippines, Vietnam, and Malaysia. U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson will travel to the Philippines for the ASEAN meeting before visiting Thailand and Malaysia, where he will discuss denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula, maritime security, and counterterrorism. Independent experts say Pyongyang's second successful ICBM test last week demonstrated the ability to reach the Midwest U.S. city of Chicago. While the test revealed reentry technology problems, the program is advancing faster than previously expected. And some, like Grant Newsham with the Forum for Strategic Studies in Tokyo, say North Korea is less than a year away from developing a verifiable miniaturized nuclear warhead to fit on an ICBM.
Unless really something extreme is done, North Korea will end up with that missile and nuclear capability that they want. It's really just an engineering problem at this point.
U.S. President Donald Trump and his security team had focused on working with China, the North's key trading partner, to fully implement sanctions. But Trump and U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Nikki Haley, recently expressed frustration with Beijing's refusal to impose crippling economic pain that would force Pyongyang to seek relief through compliance. The Trump administration has also emphasized all options, including military action, are being considered to stop the growing North Korean nuclear threat. However, U.S. Secretary of State Tillerson on Tuesday sounded a more reassuring tone, saying the United States does not blame China for the situation and reaffirmed that Washington does not seek regime change in Pyongyang. Tillerson said he would like to sit and have a dialogue with North Korean leaders at some point, but at the ASEAN forum, he's not expected to hold a formal meeting with North Korean Foreign Minister Ri Yong-ho. Southeast Asia security analyst Carl Thayer said any chance for diplomacy will have to happen quietly, away from the press, and likely with the help of a neutral country.
The policy has to be secret. If we know about it, it's going to be sunk because opposition will grow to it.
Thayer says Ri's participation at the ASEAN meeting is a positive step. There is some speculation that an inter-Korean meeting could take place on the sidelines. VOA Seoul correspondent Brian Padden and Yuumi Kim contributed to this report. Happening now in Asia, a Bangkok judge has cleared a former Thai prime minister, his deputy, and two former police officials of abuse of power charges, stemming from authorizing police force during an anti-government protest in 2008 that resulted in two deaths and hundreds jailed. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad that you've decided to join us today for VOA Asia. Stronger ties with European and other Asian countries and an increase in foreign investment have helped Vietnam's export-reliant economy rebound from a freeze of the massive Trans-Pacific Partnership trade deal earlier this year. The Southeast Asian country is one of 12 in the partnership, better known as TPP. It was briefly jolted when U.S. President Donald Trump pulled his country out of the pact in January, saying it was bad for American workers. The TPP would have cut import tariffs on Vietnamese goods shipped to the United States, Japan, and other developed markets. Last year, exports made up more than 90% of the $202 billion Vietnamese economy. Oscar Musens, senior associate with the Desen Sheeran and Associates Business Consultancy in Ho Chi Minh City, says he believed back in January that American firms at least might decide against factory investments in the country.
When that time came, we weren't really sure how things were going to affect the country. But to be honest, that really only lasted for a couple of weeks.
Vietnamese leaders have pushed countries in Europe for early ratification of a European Union free trade pact signed in 2015, and they're also talking to India, China, and peers in Southeast Asia. Vietnam has opened further to tourists from its main trading partner, China, since last year, bringing in 2.2 million arrivals from January through July. Economic liberalization at home has brought in new foreign investors, even without trade deals. Direct investment rose 9% last year, and Musen says foreign firms including Intel and Samsung Electronics have looked at Vietnam for its cheap labor and land.
Vietnam has been playing their cards pretty well. They've been able to reinforce their trading agreements with other countries. They've been trying to make it their best to get closer to their neighbors.
Vietnam's economy grew 6.21% in 2016, and the Asian Development Bank forecasts it'll expand another 6.3% this year. Vietnam keeps investors coming by building infrastructure, as well as keeping minimum wages low, and by exempting some customs duties. The vice chairman of the Indian Business Chamber in Vietnam, Radhakrishnan, says Vietnam is also aiming for a tariff-cutting deal with India, China, and 9 countries in the Association of Southeast Asian Nations, that to be in effect by 2022. A decade-old strategic partnership is also letting Vietnam get more capital from India.
Vietnam is very seriously looking into Indian markets in a big way. Currently, this ASEAN Plus 2 negotiation is going on. And strategic partnership also, they are looking for enhanced access to Indian markets and vice versa.
Indian capital has shaped up as a case study for foreign interest in Vietnam despite the lack of TPP membership. India was not part of that trade deal before the U.S. government pulled out. More than 80,000 Indians visit Vietnam each year, likely as tourists looking to eventually invest. You're listening to VOA Asia.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
This news alert from VOA Asia. Malaysian officials have seized more than 70 kilograms of illegal ivory smuggled from Lagos, Nigeria, to Kuala Lumpur Airport in a continuation of countless seizures over the past 12 months of ivory coming from Africa to Malaysia. All the big stories daily are on VOA 60 and see more on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As we continue with VOA Asia, Botswana's government says it will welcome a visit from exiled Tibetan spiritual leader the Dalai Lama later this month, despite warnings from major investor China. He will be in Botswana for a human rights seminar, but may also meet with the president, Ian Khama, which could draw some more rebuke from China. From Johannesburg, VOA's Anita Powell reports neighboring South Africa has denied the Dalai Lama 3 visas in the face of pressure from China.
Until a few weeks ago, says Lawrence Seretse, editor of the Botswana Gazette, few people in this nation of 2 million people even knew who the Dalai Lama was. But now the exiled Tibetan spiritual leader is making headlines in the Southern African nation as it prepares to host him August 17th through 19th for a human rights conference in the capital, Gaborone. China, which happens to be one of Botswana's largest trading partners, has repeatedly objected to the visit. China is a leading investor in the Southern African nation, reaching a high of more than $1 billion in direct investment in 2011. China says the Himalayan region of Tibet has been part of its realm for more than seven centuries and considers the Dalai Lama to be a dangerous separatist. He has led a shadow Tibetan government in India since he fled into exile in 1959. Here's Botswana's government spokesman, Jeff Ramsey.
He's coming here on a private visit to take part in a seminar. So it's a kind of academic seminar over 3 days. He may meet with the president. The president has indicated that that's a possibility.
If those two statements, a private visit that includes a meeting with the head of state, seem contradictory, that's because, Seretse says, they are. He says the government is playing a dangerous game by not taking a clear stance on the visit. Neighboring South Africa has on three occasions bowed to Chinese pressure by not granting the spiritual leader a visa. China has snubbed other nations for hosting the Dalai Lama. Most notably, Beijing suspended high-level diplomatic ties with Britain after then-Prime Minister David Cameron met the Dalai Lama in 2012. China also opposed former President Barack Obama's meetings with the spiritual leader, but did not follow those concerns with concrete actions. Seretse says he sees merit in the argument that Botswana is a sovereign nation and should be free to decide whom to host, and in the argument that Botswana should show support for human rights activists by inviting the Dalai Lama. But, he says, governments cannot afford to be vague, and that Botswana's government needs to make its position clearer.
We as a country haven't clearly stated what we want and what we are going to do if anything happens. What we have been doing is that we have been going back and forth with contradicting statements.
China's government has condemned the pending visit. Foreign Ministry spokesman Liu Kang addressed the topic last week. China, he said, has made its position clear in demanding that the relevant countries shall earnestly respect China's core interests and make the correct political decision on this matter. China will not interfere in other countries' internal affairs, but will not accept another country doing anything that harms China's core interests. Beijing has not specified what action it may take if the Dalai Lama does visit, but Ramsey says his government is confident that China and Botswana will remain friends.
Well, we hope that whatever differences we may have will not harm the genuine friendship and mutual cooperation that we've built up with the People's Republic of China since 1975. Certainly, the position of Botswana remains one China policy.
In the meantime, relations continue. Last week, China's government gave a $1 million grant to Botswana for flood relief efforts, with the Chinese ambassador saying, whether China was poor or rich, whether Botswana was poor or rich, China never stopped its assistance to the Botswana friend. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Developing at this hour in Asia, millions of bubbles floated across Hong Kong's skyline as part of a public art exhibit by Japanese artist Shinji Omaki called Memorial Rebirth, which has traveled through 20 cities across Asia in the last 9 years. See it and the day's other highlights at VOA 60 and visit VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, countries with few health management resources are prone to periodic outbreaks of insect-borne diseases that affects both people and livestock. One of the best ways to reduce the impact is timely vaccination and eradication of insects. But how to tell when an outbreak might occur? VOA's George Pudich spoke with a scientist from Kenya who is using satellites to predict future outbreaks.
Rift Valley fever is one of the viral diseases spread by mosquitoes that affects both humans and livestock in Africa and the Arabian Peninsula. there is no treatment for the infected, and those with severe symptoms have only a 50% chance of survival. Vaccination of livestock helps, but only if it's done before the outbreak, so knowing when it's about to occur is of crucial importance. But predicting an outbreak has been impossible. Analyzing satellite observations of Earth's weather patterns, scientists with the university's Space Research Association working at NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center picked up a curious coincidence.
We noticed one thing. Every of the outbreaks of Rift Valley fever had occurred in Eastern Africa during an El Niño event.
El Niño and La Niña are two cycles of warm and cold temperatures occurring in the equatorial Pacific, so huge that they affect weather systems as far as the Indian Ocean. And the rain they bring creates a rich environment for disease-carrying insects called vectors.
What happens is not only do you get above normal rainfall, but it's actually extended. So instead of having a growing season for about 3 months, you end up having 4 to 5 months. These conditions over a large area like Eastern Africa would result in the flooding of habitats where these mosquito eggs are and a blooming of the vectors.
A monitoring program funded by the U.S. Department of Defense Health Agency, NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center, World Health Organization, and various country partners supplies about 25 recipients with monthly information about potential risk of outbreaks. Together with Rift Valley fever, it looks at several other vector-borne diseases, such as hantavirus, chikungunya, and dengue.
We are able to map what is going on around the world on a daily basis. We basically can determine what anomalies lead to particular outbreaks.
Anyamba says more outbreaks will be prevented as the program gains more visibility among governments and non-government organizations in affected countries. The predictions are also posted on the website of the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Center for Medical and Veterinary Entomology. George Putich, VOA News, Washington.
Kids today are practically born knowing how to use smartphones and tablets and everything else electronic, so it makes sense that their toys contain a tech twist. In New York, reporter Tina Trin checked out the latest toy trends for the digital generation.
There are videos on YouTube that only make sense to kids, like this one of hands unwrapping cheap toy eggs. Seems fairly mundane, but for kids, it's the 2.0 version of opening a birthday present and has garnered close to 110 million views. That's why at the Sweet Sweet Toy Fair in New York, there was a lot of unwrapping, cracking, and hatching.
Blind bags right now are huge. Kids love opening them, love the surprise factor.
Blind bags and mystery packs typically contain miniature collectible figurines, like these little sprouts from Cabbage Patch Kids.
They're small, they're able to be purchased with allowance money or money that kids earn, pocket change.
The element of surprise is a big draw since products aren't revealed until opened.
Part of the fun has to do with the whole phenomenon of the unboxing trend that kids are watching on YouTube.
The video sharing site is also giving a boost to the fidget spinner craze.
So they're seeing their peers do really cool tricks, and also they're collecting. They want a full collection of these. They don't just want one.
Toy makers are moving quickly to speak the language of today's digital natives with toys like the Elmoji by Sesame Street and Wowie.
It's a visual language that kids get intuitively, and we want to have them solve problems using emojis because they're comfortable with them.
The Lego Boost teaches basic coding principles to kids as young as 7. But it's not all work and no play.
You can build a robot and make him do things like turn and hit a target or pull his finger and make him pass gas, which kids love.
Tech trends may come and go after all, but kids will still be kids. Tina Trin, VOA News, New York.
Well, just about the easiest tech that any of us can handle is listening to VOA Asia. We're glad that you joined us today. Use some of that tech and download our program and take VOA Asia with you during the day through iTunes, SoundCloud, from our VOA Asia Facebook page, or even our website at voanews.com. We'd also like to say hello to all the listeners at the University of the Philippines in Diliman, listening at DZUP 1602 AM radio. Thanks for joining us. Thanks, too, to Director Tracy Carter, Engineer Jim Harmon, Managing Editor Diane Gao, Ali Ogden, and David Bird as part of our VOA Asia team. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Have a super day.